ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 11, Chapter 16, Text 43. Yo vaivan manasi saṁyāg asamyat chandiyāyati tasya vratam tapo dānam śravadyāma ghatam bhuvā. Vak manasi, the speech and mind, samyak, completely, asamyachan, not controlling, diya, by intelligence, yati, a transcendentalist, tasya, his, vratam, vows, tapa, austerities, danam, charity, shravati, run out, ama, unbaked, gata, in a pot, ambuvat, like water. Translation, a transcendentalist who does not completely control his words and mind by superior intelligence will find that his spiritual vows, austerities and charity flow away just as water flows out of an unbaked clay pot. Purport. When a clay pot is properly baked, it holds any liquid substance without leakage. If a clay pot is not properly baked, however, water or any other liquid within it will seep out and be lost. Similarly, a transcendentalist who does not control his speech and mind will find that his spiritual discipline and austerity gradually seep away and are lost. Dana, or charity, refers to work performed for the welfare of others. Those who are trying to give the highest charity by preaching Krishna consciousness should not engage in speaking cleverly for the satisfaction of beautiful women, nor should they attempt to become artificially intellectual simply for the sake of mundane academic prestige. One should not even think of intimate sexual relationships, nor should one daydream of acquiring a prestigious position. Otherwise, one's determination to strictly practice Krishna consciousness will be lost, as described here. One must control the mind, senses, and speech by higher intelligence so that one's life will be successful. I'll read the next verse. Tasmadvacho mana pranam niyachin mat praparayanaha madbhakti yuktaya buddhya tata parishamapyate. Translation. Being surrendered to me, one should control the speech, mind, and life there, and then through loving devotional intelligence, one should completely fulfill the mission of life. Purport. One can develop loving devotional intelligence by perfectly chanting the Brahma Gayatri mantra awarded at the moment of Brahman initiation. By clear intelligence, one becomes gradually and spontaneously disinterested in the rewards offered by mental speculation and fruitive activity and takes full shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Thus end the purports of the humble servants of His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, to the 11th canto, 16th chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled The Lord's Opulence. Again, I read the translation of these verses. A transcendentalist who does not completely control his words and mind by superior intelligence will find that his spiritual vows, austerities, and charity flow away just as water flows out of an unbaked clay pot. Being surrendered to me, one should control the speech, mind, and life air, and then through loving devotional intelligence, one will completely fulfill the mission of life. So, here it is stressed that a transcendentalist must completely control his words and mind by superior intelligence. And the means to do that is explained in the verse after, through loving devotional intelligence, loving devotional service. One can attain, can fulfill the mission of life, so one can control the speech and the mind by engaging them in the activities of devotional service, simply by sitting down in a secluded place and trying to stop thinking, stop speaking, like some transcendentalists take the Mona Vrata, vow of silence. This will not actually enable one to permanently control the mind and senses, because the nature of the living being is active, and although one by practice may be able to discipline himself to sit silently in meditation for some temporary period, he cannot permanently remain in that state. Obviously, there are some impersonalists who are adept, quite adept at meditation on Brahman, and have disciplined themselves to follow some strict vows and austerities, but ultimately the living entity is active by nature, and he will, and the action, the type of action that we perform is originates in the mind, in the sense that we have different desires. Of course, there obviously our bodily needs depend on the type of body a person has. Their bodily needs and the different species they are endeavoring to fulfill their bodily needs. I don't know how exactly the mind of the animal functions. Anybody have a comment here? Huh? Whether the mind, the animal has a mind, a functioning mind, or is it in a very sort of undeveloped state? Or it's not something that we hear much about, is it? Yeah? Speak up, please.
Yeah, listening to the lecture by Srila Prabhupada the other day, and he was saying that as soon as you get a body, the body demands some sort of sense gratification, and your mind starts to think in terms of that bodily sense gratification. Just like a fire within wood sort of determines the size of the fire, so the body determines the way the mind works for sense gratification.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, the body of an animal or an insect, I mean, the body is a lower type of body, so the mind wouldn't be so active or developed, though it has some function, no doubt. I mean, because we have the subtle body of mind, intelligence, and false ego, and the living entity remains encaged within a subtle body, but depending on the type of gross body, the mind may be more or less developed, isn't it? Because we see even in human society, some persons' minds, you know, they're clearly not so sophisticated, shall we say, as others. But the mind is one of the six senses, and it's a kind of central central coordinating sense. Yeah, they must have some sort of mind, right? Mm-hmm. Okay. So you can have deeper insight.
you can see it in the chimpanzees, how they are much, they're really rough, and the elephant also. I used to walk past the elephant every morning, the gate was by the elephant's enclosure. I used to feed the elephant all the time. If I didn't feed the elephant, she'd get upset. And I remember working in the cage opposite,
There's also a saying, isn't it, elephant and woman never forget? Isn't it? There's a saying like that, huh?
Yeah.
So if they never forget, means they must have a mind, right? So, but anyway, different types of animals. I mean, obviously, like elephant and chimpanzee, they're vegetarians, actually, aren't they? Both of them. They're sort of more elevated than maybe other animals, but they've all got some sort of mind, and the animals are communicating in different ways, isn't it? They have communication. So some sort of mental function is there. But obviously some person minds are more developed than others. I mean, that's one of the sort of principles, I suppose, of education, to try to develop a person's mind and intelligence so that he can, you know, think in different ways. And so, you know, just trying to keep that mind still and focused on Brahman, very difficult. And of course in the Bhagavad Gita, Arjuna says it's more difficult to control the mind than to control the wind. The mind, we can experience our mind is constantly, you know, moving here and there, thinking so many things. And that generates, you know, activity. The particular desires that are in the mind, you know, cause us to act in different ways. But obviously the mind, the way the mind thinks, the types of desires that the mind has, they're conditioned by the body, particular body also. So, you know, one is influencing the other, the body's influencing the mind is influencing the body. So, I mean, just like, say, I guess, you know, hog, for example, he thinks about eating stool. But, you know, for a human being, that is not attractive. Human being would like to eat sweet rice or some tasty dish. But the hog has no interest, so, you know, the types of food or the types of enjoyment, you know, all are eating, sleeping, mating and defending, but the particular type of desires that we may have, the particular flavor of desires, is very much influenced by the type of body that we have. And similarly, the activities that the body performs, they come about due to the way in which the mind is desiring. We desire, okay, I want to get a PhD or something, so you're going to university to study, want to get to become very wealthy, and he's starting a business, whatever. So they, you know, the type of activity or the activities are generated in the mind. So if a person has no activity at all, no mental or physical activity, it won't last, because the nature of the soul is active. That energy is there. Something has to be done with it. It cannot just be bottled up and kept permanently bottled up. Eventually has to have some outlet. So the impersonalists, they don't have any outlet on this of spiritual action. So therefore the tendency, as Prabhupada said, is to go back to the material platform and act in a pious way, act in a mode of goodness. Just like many impersonalists, they're very dedicated to doing mundane welfare work. It was interesting, I was looking at the video of Prabhupada in Rishikesh, yeah? Number 11, that one you gave me. And the Maharishi Yogi was in Rishikesh at the same time, and some of his disciples were coming every evening to hear Srila Prabhupada. And Maharishi sent a message that, you know, don't overstrain yourself, Swamiji, better not to lecture every evening. You know, by which Prabhupada understood he doesn't want me preaching to his disciples. Anyway, one of the ladies, you know, she asked a question, what are you doing for the good of humanity? And apparently the Prabhupada got very upset. You know, he said, you know, this mundane welfare work, because, you know, she was implying, you know, what sort of charitable work are you doing? This mundane welfare work is just like blowing on a boil, he said. You know, the boil is, you know, full of pus, and you just blow on it. You know, what's the use? He said, we are doing, you know, real welfare work to terminate the suffering of material existence, to rescue the living entities from a cycle of birth and death. This is a real welfare work. This is paropakar. So that's a tendency of the impersonalists. Huh? They do some meditation, but then they're forced to act. They don't know how to act on the spiritual platform, so they just, you know, come back to the material platform and do some mundane charity. So they haven't actually broken through to the real eternal platform of transcendental activity. They just got on the cusp of the spiritual realm and come back down again. But by the process of devotional service, the living being is trained to always act on a spiritual platform, act in connection with Krishna, and to use the body and the mind and the possessions, the speech, everything in connection with the Lord, in the service to the Lord. So that way, it's very natural, and the living entity is, you know, he's able to fulfill various kinds of desire, because various kinds of desires are there even in devotees connected with the material body. We want to train to fulfill all desires in the service of Krishna, through the service of Krishna. Not that it's just serving Krishna to fulfill those desires, but the desires become dovetailed so that simultaneously there can be satisfaction, first and foremost, of Krishna, then of the soul, of the mind, of the body. No, it's a holistic process. Is that the right word? Holistic, yeah? It's a complete process. It takes into account all aspects of the living being. When we use the word Atma, generally it refers to the soul. And in a couple of verses back, it was used to refer to intelligence. In fact, yesterday's verse, wasn't it? Atmanam, the intelligence. Atmana, by purified intelligence. So Atma, Jivatma, it refers to the soul. Atma refers to the intelligence. Atma also used to refer to the mind and used to refer to the body. So the real Atma, of course, is the soul. And there's also, of course, Paramatma, the Supreme Soul. But just talking about a living entity, we are Jivatma. But when we're encased in a material body, you know, we also have these outer covering Atmas, intelligence, mind, body. It's a whole package. We can't just endeavor to act only for the satisfaction of the soul without... while neglecting the intelligence, the mind, and the body. It's all interlinked as long as we're in the material body. Of course, we have to make the distinction. We shouldn't be bewildered, you know, by thinking it's all one. I mean, people in the material world, they tend to not be able to distinguish very well between the person and his body and his mind. You know, for them, it is in one sense. It's all one, it's all connected, but there is a definite distinction, and in Krishna consciousness, a devotee learns to distinguish clearly between these different facets of his personality, and the body is temporary, and the mind also, intelligence, material mind intelligence at least, they are temporary. The soul itself has eternal spiritual intelligence, spiritual mind, but there's a covering by the material mind and material intelligence. And they are also shaped according to the particular type of body that he gets. Therefore, a chimpanzee's mind is not nearly as developed as human beings' mind. And different human beings have different levels of development of their mind and intelligence. So, any spiritual process, if it's going to be effective, it has to take into account the needs of the body and the mind, and the desires are shaped to a considerable extent by the body. But in Krishna consciousness, it is not that one just has to, you know, fill up his mind with the demands of the body, which tends to happen in material life. Persons are very much on the external platform. They don't understand their spiritual nature. They don't understand the needs of the soul, how to nourish those needs. So they're identifying so strongly with the body that they're always concerned how to satisfy the needs of the body. Or those who may be a little bit more elevated, they're more concerned with their mental needs. I mean, philosophers, writers, and, you know, persons like that. But many persons are just on a very gross bodily platform. When they go to the footy match and they, you know, drink a lot of beer or go to the whatever, you know, just some physical activity and... as you see, you know, kind of yabo type persons, which you get everywhere in the world. Sometimes devotees joke in Australia about yabos and ockers and rednecks and so forth, but they have them all over the world. I mean, England. I don't know. They have so many different football divisions, soccer. You know, different levels. And I mean, I don't know how many million people every Saturday and Sunday must be at these football matches and are watching them on TV. I mean, physically going, you know, some millions probably, if it's all out of the getting drunk and just, you know, it's a very sort of bodily consciousness. So the mind is just, you know, oscillating around the physical needs. But then again, there are all kinds of intellectuals and scholars and people that work in universities and doing their research, and they're much more, you know, on the mental level, finding their satisfaction on that level. And for devotees, I mean, devotees have their physical needs to get married, to have a family, to just concerned, obviously. Most devotees are concerned about that, but the physical and mental need, emotional needs, and so forth. But the idea is that it should be all dovetailed in the service of Krishna. The desires to be dovetailed. Kamam jadasye na tu kama kamyaya. This mentioned how Ambarish Maharaj, he was using his desires to fulfill the desires of the Lord. That means that, you know, we need training, not only physically how to act or how to speak, but also how to desire, how to think. Some training has to be there. Sometimes devotees are accused of brainwashing. Of course, Prabhupada, he said, yes, they need their brains washed. They're full of stool, full of impure, mundane material desires. So purification is required. But the principle of you know, training a person not only how to act and speak, but how to desire, this is also there in a mundane society. For example, a child, he just likes to play around. But parents know he has to be sent to school, he has to be trained. That means he has to get mental training, training how to desire. Instead of just desiring to play, he gradually has to be trained to desire to study, to pass his exams, so he eventually can get a job and he can function in society. So it takes time, of course, to change the nature of a person's desire. And as his desires are, you know, changed gradually, or they're focused in a particular way, so his activities are also changing simultaneously. So his behavior when he's like 10 years old is different from when he's 4 or 5 years old, hopefully at least. Sometimes it doesn't always work, as we know. Then a person may be called a retarded or mentally challenged or whatever. If he maintains the mentality of a 4 or 5 year old, but he's got a body of 15 or something, then it's considered, you know, that there's not a proper balance between his desires and his physical body, and so he's not able to function in society properly. So, but to take it to another level, spiritual needs also have to be satisfied, and if a person simultaneously with getting physical and mental training, he's not getting spiritual training and not learning how to dovetail his thoughts and his activities in the service of the Lord, then even though he's got a human form of life and he may be grown up and he may even be a big intellectual, he'd be still spiritually retarded, because that balance isn't there. So it's important then that the needs of the body, mind, and the soul are taken care of simultaneously. And the priority is to be given to the needs of the soul. The needs of the body and the mind can be adjusted within the, you know, sphere of needs of the soul, which means to serve Krishna. So like that, you have to strike the proper balance. And that will enable a person to, you know, control his mind and his words and his senses. by doing everything according to the system of bhakti yoga. And if he doesn't do it, if he's taken to the spiritual path and he doesn't do it, then he will lose his spiritual strength gradually. As mentioned here, the effects of his spiritual vows, austerities and charity will flow away just as water flows out of an unbaked clay pot. So we have to stick to the process and always, you know, hear what Krishna is telling us. Just these words are spoken by Krishna. To hear what Krishna is telling us, what the acharyas are telling us, and keep our life, our activities focused on their instructions. Do our activities according to the guidelines which they have set, and then one will be able to retain spiritual strength and enthusiasm and help others also to maintain theirs. So in this way one can do the good for oneself and good for others. We're trying to save people from ignorance, from illusion, but first one has to save oneself in order to be able to save others or help others. So oneself has to be steady and fixed in the practice of Krishna consciousness, and from that platform one can set example for others, and one will have the understanding and realization to be able to give good guidance to others. And such transcendentalists are needed in society, because especially in Kali Yuga, you know, there's tremendous degeneration in human society, degradation, slipping down onto that bodily platform, an animalistic platform, with very low intelligence and uncultured behavior. I mean, culture is very much connected with the mind. Higher culture, in the way that, and that the culture helps to engage the senses and the body into different cultural activities. They help to engage the body and the senses in a way which is uplifting. It's like in Murwillumbah last week, there was a cultural performance, Bharatanatyam performance. So it was quite impressive, actually. Devotees also who studied music, they were, you know, singing, and various Bharatanatyam performers. One, Jai Govindi has a school in Canada, Bharatanatyam school. And there's one Maharaj from England who is doing a PhD in Bharatanatyam, and then some local Maharajis who, you know, practicing apparently 8 hours a day for 1 year already. They're very serious, you know. They're trying to start up some kind of institute there in New Govardhan, educational institute, so that devotees can engage their propensities in a very cultured way. So this is actually conducive. Prabhupada once said it, Krishna consciousness, cultural conquest. And in England he strongly recommended drama, that devotees perform dramas. It's very nice on that video also of Prabhupada. It shows last pandal in Mumbai that Prabhupada attended in March, April 77. The Vaikuntha players were there. They performed Ramayana. It shows some excerpts, and very powerful performance. The audience was completely captivated. Prabhupada made some comment, like it's even better than the Ramayana itself, or something to that effect. And people were enchanted. This kind of cultural presentation of Krishna consciousness, very powerful, just like Prabhupada encouraged artists, and so many beautiful paintings of Krishna, Lord Chaitanya. There's also a BBT art seminar which takes place in Vrindavan every year. Those who are aspiring artists, they can go there. Did I see you in the video? Yes. So this is very good, you know. Devotees can use their, you know, mind, the senses, in these kind of cultural activities which are connected to Krishna. In Russia, devotees are very artistic in that way. At the festivals, they always like to put on different kind of cultural presentations, drama, music, poetry, dance. Architecture is also considered to be a very important lasting statement of a civilization. We see the Greek architecture, Roman architecture, these famous buildings that lasted, many, many centuries. This kind of also cultural statement. Same way we are trying to build temples like in Mayapur. This will remind people of Krishna and draw them to Krishna for centuries. So in this way, there's plenty of scope in Krishna consciousness for engaging the senses and the mind, intelligence, all in the service of Krishna. The deity worship itself is even. So many beautiful outfits the deities have, and beautiful garlands, and the cooks are cooking, varieties of very palatable dishes to be offered to the Lord. And big festivals, and many, many preparations may be offered. And of course, Prabhupada especially liked that a lot of prasad too should be distributed, but it's an art, and Prabhupada taught that art also of cooking, culinary art. He said, Krishna consciousness is a kitchen religion. That video also showed in Rishikesh, Prabhupada, he went there, he was ill actually. They were carrying him in a palanquin, and I had the fortune, I remember, to see him off at the station in New Delhi, and he had bought some incense for just traveling and sanctum, but then we were able to give it to Prabhupada for his carriage when he went to Rishikesh. But anyway, and he got there, and he was staying in that house by the river, by the Ganga. He was ill, but he was in the kitchen there. It shows him, cooking chapatis. And right at the start in Krishna consciousness also, Prabhupada, in the beginning he was preparing prasadam and serving it personally. So this is also the very important aspect of Krishna conscious culture, and especially in Australia, I think Prabhupada stressed the importance of prasadam distribution, and it's a very, it's a fact, Prabhupada, he understood very well. ISKCON has so many restaurants around Australia, and so many catering programs going on. New Govardhan has a very high-powered catering program. They have two kinds. They were in Woodford Festival just 2 weeks ago, Woodford Festival, and simultaneously in Tasmania, they're also distributing prasadam. And in their restaurant in the Gold Coast also. Ajita told me 1 week profit, $125,000. They made profit, huh? $75,000 in Woodford, $40,000 in Tasmania, and $10,000 in the restaurant. So it shows how much prasadam is being distributed, how much people like prasadam. Devotees were at Pete's Ridge Festival also, the New Gokul devotees. They also they did some 20,000-30,000 or something. You of course also do regularly, but and your restaurants too, very successful. But Kali Krishna was telling me how, you know, there's so many stalls there and selling different food stuff, but you know, that our stall was always packed and people preferred. They would say, you know, your food is so much better than all the other kinds of food. So it's a very powerful aspect of Krishna conscious culture. Everyone loves to eat, everyone has to eat, and palatable food stuff is very pleasing. So this is a important means, one of the principal weapons for fighting Maya, principal means of distributing Krishna consciousness, prasadam distribution. Harinam, of course, a kirtan is very attractive, very pleasing, and book distribution. So festivals, colorful festivals, these all cultural events also is very attractive to Woodford. Last year they had 6 Rathiatras, actually, 6 days, and I think like Anudumna Maharaj's party been here in December. It's also a cultural presentation of Krishna, a very successful cultural presentation. So see how many people it's attracting, that program, and packed out everywhere. So that is engaging the senses and the mind and the words in the service of the Lord. Thus it's a very, you know, complete package, complete process of spiritual upliftment, and the mind and speech and senses, they can be automatically controlled just by engaging in those activities which are relishable for the senses and the mind and for the soul, and pleasing to Krishna. Okay, any comment or question? Yeah.
I think what people are getting is they do their illuminations. When they do their illumination, they can't decide what to do.
When they do their what?
Illuminations. Meaning the brain is not allowing them to do certain things unconsciously, but unconsciously they want to do certain things. And so they have no illuminations. That's why they run into problems.
They have inhibitions.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like derivatives. They cannot think at that time what is right and what is wrong. They have no inhibitions.
No inhibitions.
And then they can do anything.
If people have no moral compass, as they say. In Krishna consciousness, you know, we have to be trained in the moral principles, you know, what is right, what is to be done, what is not to be done, what activities are supportive of spiritual life, what activities are detrimental. So to avoid detrimental activities and cultivate activities which are conducive for spiritual progress. Just as also Rupa Goswami has given it, those verses, Atyahara Prayasa Cha. Utsahan nischa daryat, the activities which are detrimental for spiritual life, the activities which are conducive for spiritual life. So that training has to be there, and if one sticks to those activities which are conducive, then he can be protected in Krishna consciousness and make progress. But if one engages activities which are detrimental, then gradually his spiritual strength will be reduced, as mentioned here.
When you mentioned, when they enter sattva, when they pass the stage, then they are fully absorbed in doing transcendental and living devotional service.
Correct.
Pass the trip.
Yes, Vasudev Sattva, Sudha Sattva. Mm-hmm. Yes?
The Buddhists are trying to avoid desire. Is that due to envy of Krishna?
The Buddhists are trying to avoid desire. Is that due to enviousness of Krishna? Well, one side, one can say that, you know, all living entities in the material world, they're here because of some enviousness towards Krishna. Different kinds of transcendentalists, they've understood that material life is full of suffering, and they are trying to escape from that. And they know that desire causes action. And they know that, you know, action in the material world causes karma. So they're just thinking, they're going, you know, back that if they stop desiring, then they can stop creating karma. So it's the same as the impersonalists, basically. Sometimes said the philosophy of Sankaracharya just covered Buddhism to try to ultimately stop all activities, and that will be the solution to it. That's the way to stop suffering in material existence. They don't understand, you know, how to act, to perform akarma, or action which doesn't create karma. Rather, there's that verse in the Bhagavad Gita, I can't remember exactly how it's English. One who sees action in inaction and inaction in action, he's a wise among men. What's exactly? But the principle is that one who sees inaction in action is actually Krishna consciousness. Action in inaction is impersonalism, because they're inactive, they're trying to stop activity, but even in that state there's some creation of karma. You know, anything they do will create karma. Eat, breathe, it will create karma. So there's action or karma within their inaction. But Krishna consciousness, on the other hand, it is inaction in action. Devotees are active, but there's inaction in the sense there's no creation of karma. Do you have the translation of that?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
The
I can't remember. It's something like
that. Does not become entangled with creative reactions.
Yeah. One who sees action in inaction and inaction in action does not become.
Does not become entangled with creative actions.
Something like that, yeah.
One who sees inaction in action and action in inaction is intelligent.
Hmm. So one has to, you know, be able to distinguish between those. So the Buddhists, that is their, there's action in action there. There's karma in their inaction. Yeah. You mean if they're like man? No, I mean if he has tried to take some spiritual vows and perform some austerities and charity, that it kind of is building up his momentum towards spiritual perfection, but obviously there has been some benefit from those things, but the benefit will go away if he doesn't maintain that level of spiritual practice by always engaging his words and mind and senses in Krishna's service. So one has to maintain that platform.
Keep trying,
yes. And keep listening to Krishna, to keep studying, keep hearing from the acharyas, keep hearing from the devotees. That will improve one's spiritual intelligence. We get the spiritual intelligence from higher source. So yes, keep trying and keep listening and keep applying those instructions. And I can't say it was in vain, although all those steps that a person takes on the spiritual path, they're all beneficial. But you cannot rest on your laurels, so to speak. You cannot become complacent and think that automatically, just because you'd done so much service before, that automatically you'll be able to remain in Krishna. And Maya is very powerful. You can capture a person at any time.
I was just thinking, what can we say is the demarcation between what we call animal life and human life? Where that's because you see some people, by their activities, they're actually less noble than some of the animals we see.
Well, Prabhupada, he says that the difference is the spiritual life. If somebody doesn't have any spiritual life, then it's just like animal life. That's what Hitu Padesh also says. Human beings and animals share the propensity of eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. But if a human being does not engage in spiritual activities, then he's considered no better than an animal. That's a distinction that the Shastras make, the Acharyas make. Though people in the material world, they have different type of distinction. They just judge by the external body.
Royal edition of the animals.
Modern
civilization.
Polished animal. Okay, Hare Krishna. Antaraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki, Samvita Bhaktivinoda ki, Gaur Premanandini.